Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory. And don't forget, your trade-in's never been worth more. And a service department that takes care of it all, from inspections to routine maintenance to the difficult. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right, Tim Brando in a few moments. Once we work that out, first of all, our play-by-play call of the day. Georgia nursing a lead late, and a defensive back doesn't listen to his coach.
You need 10, play clock at 4. From the pocket, launching downfield, underthrown and intercepted. Kaylee Ringo has an escort down the sidelines. The way to the end zone, and Georgia is going to conquer the Crimson Tide.
Great call by Chris Fowler on that play. By the way, he didn't listen to his coach. Kirby's smart. You watch him. He's telling him to go down, go down, go down. And the kid's looking like, I got all this green field turf in front of me. What do you think? Go down. I'm going to go to the end zone. Kirby, go down, go down. All right. With that, we bring in, he knows how much I admire his work, all the fans understand that just over the years. And we survived Sam Licklider together. So it's to the great Hall of Famer, Tim Brando, Hall of Famer in these eyes. How are you, my friend? Happy New Year.
I'm great, Steve. It's good to be with you, man. Yeah, if you last long enough, you become Hall of Famers in different places. You know, you just have to last long enough. So it's truly, like celebrity, Hall of Fame is truly in the eyes of the beholder. I got in it into my own home state, and, you know, if you last long enough, you start getting little pieces of regions of the country start falling in line. You know, I think it all depends on how long the ticker is good, you know. So I'm happy to be alive and happy to still be calling games of consequence.
You got that right. And, by the way, in the eyes of this peer, you're a Hall of Famer. So we'll go with
Thank
that.
Thank you, pal. Appreciate
all
that.
All right. Yeah, anytime. You watched the game on Monday night. What did you think?
Well, I thought the first half was a snooze fest, and that
yes.
You know, it was going to be like a lot of other SEC rematches and championship games. And, you know, we've had this happen before. I could even go back to the 96 rematch between Florida State and Florida at the Sugar Bowl, which was a 52-20 blowout. And Spurrier got his title against Bobby Bowden in a rematch. They're just generally not good for the college game. Doesn't mean the game can be awful, but the LSU-Alabama rematch was so awful, it nuked the BCS and gave us the CFP. And I thought the first half was so bad last night that it might get us the expansion sooner than later. But but the reality is the second half, the game picked up. Both teams played better. Georgia's storyline was just off the charts, and what that kid did, what Stetson Bennett did, I put out a little on Brando today from my study about an hour ago before I came on with you, and I stated in that this is why college football is still the best, for all of its foibles, for all of the issues that you know, I'm as guilty as anyone of pointing out on a regular basis, the issues that we have with the sport, things that need to be taken care of to make it better. College football is still the best, and what that kid did, what Stetson Bennett IV accomplished, is something that only college football could do. Okay, all those great games we saw on Sunday and Saturday in the NFL and Week 18, as great as all of them were, and they were in many cases off the charts good, you can't have a story like that in the NFL, where you know preferred walk-on who had to play junior college ball at Jones College in Mississippi can do what he did for the school he dreamed of playing for. I mean, that is the definition of realizing your dream in a way that it can't be done at any other level but college football. So, you know, and I would compare the Kurt Warner story. Now a motion picture, okay?
Yeah.
The movie on Kurt Warner, and it's a great rags-to-riches story. It's still not as pure as this. It's not. That young man will never play a down in the NFL, but he'll also never have a drink that he has to buy or a meal he'll have to purchase in the state of Georgia for the rest of his life. That does not happen at the pro level. So with all the things that are swirling around the sport that are negative, whether it's the transfer portal, NIL, realignment, expansion, this was exactly what college football needed to close out the year, and that's even with an all-SEC final, which is unfortunate for the sport. It doesn't help. I think the rating will probably be 10, 15, 20% lower than it was a year ago for the Ohio State-Alabama game, just because of the regionality of it. But but to that kid's credit and to both teams, really, they delivered, you know, in a way that they really had to for the college game. We should celebrate it. You know, I spent a lot of time talking about what's wrong with college football, and I think what I'm doing is from the prism of love. I think people that know me well, such as yourself, you know where I'm coming from.
Yep.
Not all fans do, particularly those on social media. And you know, I don't want to be the old curmudgeon that's always pissed off. I want to be the guy also that says, "Let's celebrate this kid. Let's celebrate the game." And I got a lot of friends at Georgia. You know, lifelong friends. Vince Dooley, his first year out of coaching, worked with me on ESPN in 1989. We did the Penn State Holiday Bowl win, as you recall, against BYU, mm-hmm. When Gary Brown stole the ball from Todd Detmea, as he said.
Todd Detmea.
We you know, their longtime SID, Claude Felton's a dear friend. Buck Ballou, Herschel Walker, who I called games for in the USFL. Barbara and Vince, you know, and Tony Barnhart, who worked with me for 10 of the 18 years I was at CBS. You know, those are all dogs, and I'm happy for them today.
Yeah, no question. And it's interesting because a year ago, Georgia played a game at Arkansas. And Newman had transferred in from Wake Forest. They had the Mathis, who's a five-star kid. Daniels had transferred in from USC. And then all of a sudden, guys started getting hurt, and he played pretty well. It's amazing that this walk-on, who had to go JC and then come back, through attrition, is the guy. And you're right. That's what makes this a great story.
Yeah. I don't doubt that there'll be a movie made about it. I really don't. You know, I mean, the it's just too good. It's too great of a story. And who knows what the young man may become.
Right.
You know, I saw a picture of Coach Dooley, Vince, on the sidelines, standing next to Billy Payne, who is the former Masters chairman and head of the Atlanta Olympic Committee when the games were held in 1996 in Atlanta. He played tight end for Vince in 1966 and 67. And to see Vince there, about to turn 90 years old, get to see that with his own eyes. You know, I'm texting Barbara. Barbara had come into contact, apparently, with somebody that had COVID, so she didn't make the trip. Her daughter, Deanna, Vince and Barbara's daughter, Deanna, was with him, and his son, Daniel. They were up in the athletic director's box, and their AD now, Josh Brooks, is an old ULM guy. He was the associate athletic director at my alma mater before he went back to Georgia. He had Georgia roots and went back there to become AD. So, you know, I'm dialing all these people up, and they're all getting back to me. You know, you know, it's midnight. Yeah, man, it's great, you know. Barbara was like the first, and I knew when she got in touch with me that she must not be with Vince, and she was back home because of you know, contact tracing. She didn't want to be, you know, a problem. So she, they're just all ecstatic. You know, it's like, and if you've been a, you know, someone that's from that family, from, and you've been so close, Georgia's been so close since 2017, really. And Alabama's been the team that's done them in. This was sort of a rite of passage for the old timers, you know, that thought it might not ever happen again.
You and I talk enough, either in a format like this or privately when we're in the box, and the two of us care deeply about the game, all right? And that's where you always come from, because you care about the game.
Right.
So now we're at a point with, you know, college basketball seems to pull off an early signing date with ease. They come up with a tournament and an NIT, which is like minor bowl games, and they do it seamlessly, or at least so it seems. Why can't college football do things as seamlessly as that?
Yeah, this is going to sound like a slap at college basketball, and I don't mean for it to, Steve. But the reason for it, and I think we have to address this, and I do so with, again, from a prism of care and concern and, and as much affinity for basketball as I have for football. In the 80s and 90s, all right, even the Sam Licklider period of Penn State basketball.
Yes.
College basketball was bigger then than it is now.
Yep.
Okay. And a lot of people point to the tournament's overall success as the overreaching problem with college basketball's lack of interest during the regular season. I don't buy that. I really don't. And I'm sure you don't either, because you're at the games there in Happy Valley, and you see how many people care on a regular basis about Big Ten basketball when schools come in there, you know, and when Penn State, who's almost always an underdog, is still capable of knocking off a top 15 Big Ten team. You see it all the time.
Yep.
But there is truth to the fact that college basketball does not rate as well in the regular season, and hasn't for a long, long time. And I think, again, it's not the fault of the sport or the game as much as it is a byproduct of the NCAA tournament becoming so big. Okay. I know friends of mine in the business that will say that the greatest time in sports in this country is when the Masters, we're on the eve of the Masters, the Final Four is being played, the NCAA tournament's been going on for 3 weeks, and pitchers and catchers have reported, and we're about to have the first pitch. A lot of people feel that way about sports in our country. That, and the tournament being where it is has a lot to do with that. It just captivates everyone. And having done the NCAAs for 18 years and been part of it, I know where they're coming from. I do. But basketball's regular season, for whatever reason, has been viewed in such a manner that, you know, ESPN and Fox both are carrying tons of college basketball games. I mean, you can turn on your cable every night on FS1 and on ESPN or their family of networks, and then, you know, turn over to Big Ten Network and the ACC Network and the SEC. What do you see? You see college basketball. But you don't hear anybody talking about it the next day at the water cooler or even on TV on the very networks that are carrying games. They're not talking about college basketball. They're talking about the NBA or they're talking about the NFL. They're not talking about college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
College
yep.
football is so big, has gotten so big in recent years, that and the regular season is such a success, okay, in this, of the sport, that making any change with college football is just, it's just so hard to do, so hard to accomplish. There are so many favors historically that have to be paid. The whole we've got to protect the bowl syndrome that's still out there among the leaders of college football is, in my opinion, outdated and stale, but it still exists, okay?
Yeah.
We got to watch the stinking playoffs on New Year's Eve because the Rose Bowl has to have the sun setting over the San Gabriels at the same stinking time every January 1st. Okay? That is not in the best interest of the sport. I don't care what Big Ten people think about the Rose Bowl. That's just right. not good. It's not good for the sport that, you know, most of the 18 to 49-year-olds are out partying on New Year's Eve, and the ratings are lower than they've been, you know, in a long, long time for the semifinals. But that's what happens, and it's because of this outdated view of college football, and the people that govern it have not sped up. They've not kept up with the times. And I think that in basketball, yeah, you could put together CDI, put together this, NIT that, we're good to go. Nobody says anything. And, of course, if they win the championship of any one of those tournaments, they get a big trophy, everybody comes home, people meet the team at the airport, and it's all great, right? Yeah. That's what happens. We have to, I think, really need, we all really need to put pressure on the leaders of the conferences now. And I know we got three new ones, okay? Yeah. And I think these new ones are having issues with trust with the old ones. And I don't know if you happen to see it, but the interviews that were given by Bowlesby and Sankey, yep. In the aftermath of yesterday's meetings they had in Indianapolis about expansion were just as frustrating and as negative as any I think I've ever seen or heard.
Agreed.
It's clear we're kicking the can down the road for another, you know, 3 to 4 years until these television contracts are up before we see any change in the college football playoff format. I mean, that's the deal. There's just a level of distrust, and the best way of putting it would be the relationships are fractured. All right? They may be telling us that they get along well and they're collegial, but when they get away from one another, they loathe the opposition's views. And anybody that covers the sport on a regular basis understands that. It's really sad.
Yeah, the big difference between them and us is that you and I actually do get along well. So,
yeah, you know, and it's I don't get it. I just don't.
I don't either.
I don't understand why certain items have to be sticking points to the extent that they have to be sticking points. But Steve, I think what the bottom line issue to all this is. And you know what? To some extent, Greg Sankey and Bob Bowlesby are on the same side here. They both want a 12-team playoff. And
right.
And you know what? So did Jack Swarbrick, and so did Craig Thompson. And by the way, they were asked to be the four guys. They were asked to be the quartet to go out and do the homework, the research, to find out what a 12-team playoff would be worth and how marketable it would be when they put it out for bidding in the next 4 years. But there was this thought back in the spring, or back in June, I think it was, May or June, that they could possibly implement it as soon as next year.
Right.
You know, but greed got in the way. The moment Greg Sankey procured Texas and Oklahoma right out from underneath Bob Bowlesby, who was on the same committee to bring Texas and OU in, it was stop the presses. You know, stop yeah. the presses. And I think that... That maneuver by Sankey put the brakes on all this. I don't think any of the other commissioners want to say it. It's kind of like the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
But I think all this stuff about, well, it must be an automatic qualifier in the Big Ten, or we must have eight in the ACC. I think that's all smoke screens for the fact that they don't want to do business with each other until they have to, and they don't have to until the TV deals are up. You know what I mean? That's what
yep.
I think.
You're well said. Tim, always, always a pleasure. You know that. Thank you, my friend. I hope we get to talk again soon.
Yeah, I hope I get in there to Happy Valley for a hoops game. And if not, then certainly for football. I missed getting in there this year, and I hope to get back real, real soon. Thought I had a chance for that Michigan State game the week we wound up getting Minnesota-Wisconsin, which turned out to be a great game and
yeah.
for the Western Division title. But you know how much I want to get back to Penn State, okay?
Better believe it, my friend. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
All right, Steve. Take care.
Tim Brando, Fox Sports.
Can we have him on the CFP committee, please?
Well, again, look.
He is so right about everything. 110% agree.
Can I tell a quick story here?
Absolutely.
And it deals with the show. Jim Delaney did this show, I think, with three, four times, maybe? So on one of the appearances on the show, and this is when he was the commissioner of the Big Ten. This is not a post-commissioner. We finally got him on. He was, you know, the commissioner at the time. And I asked him a question. I know, Jim, how difficult it was to get to. And he started laughing. And he said, "You get it." I said, "Yeah, I got it." I said, "I'm sure it had to be difficult to get to four." I said, "What did it take?" He said, "Steve, look, I brought a fight to the table that I wanted nothing but conference champions to be in the four." Now, keep in mind, under that format, Georgia would not have played in last night's game. They weren't a conference champion. Under that format, Penn State would have been in 2016. Ohio State would have been out. All right? He said, "And it's a fight I didn't win." He said, "I didn't win." Now, how did they get to four? Because as soon as Jim realized, okay, it's a fight I can't win, what's the best format to make this go forward? Since I can't win my fight. So he didn't take all of his toys and go home. Because Jim Delaney understood, and this is what I'm sure Kevin Warren understands this too. But what Jim Delaney understood was that his obligation was to the 14 university presidents in the Big Ten. His obligation was to do the best for the 14 athletic departments in the Big Ten. And so he said, "Okay, you know, I argued with everybody in the room and found out there was no consensus for my argument. So instead of drawing a line, he said, okay, let's talk about formats that can work." And they got to it. That's how he explained it, and he's right. Eventually, for Jim Phillips of the ACC and Kevin Warren of the Big Ten, they've got to take a big picture view and realize that expanding to 12 is best for the 14 university presidents in the Big Ten. It's best for the 14 athletic departments in the Big Ten because there's going to be more money coming into the Big Ten that each school can benefit from. And other sports besides football and basketball will end up getting some of that money. It'll be good for them, too. And that's leadership. You make your stand. You realize that, wait a minute, okay, I'm now like the ram that's running into the wall here. Okay? How do I do this in such a way now where I make everything better for my constituents by changing or adapting my stance to allow us to come to a consensus? That's what they need. That's actually leadership. Because it's becoming obvious now who the two issues are. The two issues are Jim Phillips of the ACC and Kevin Warren of the Big Ten, based on stories coming out today. Neil Coulong in the next half hour. Tyler Donahue tomorrow. Got a lot going on. Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com and News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. They put up a revised Big Ten football schedule today. They have since taken it down. I then received word from the Big Ten that they'll officially be announcing changes tomorrow. So we'll get into what the, you know, I think we can all wait 24 hours. But the revised one I saw is a little bit better in layout, and we'll go from there. Okay? So we will get to that a little bit later. In other words, tomorrow. I'm at any complaints. Just want to make sure that we're not bypassing the tomb of hate.
Well, maybe we'll get to this tomorrow, but what happened?
What happened?
Yes.
Well, first of all, it's the conference that's making the changes, and it's up to them to put the changes out. That's all.
Okay.
I mean, that's all.
It's just, it just feels like a random time to suddenly change the football schedule for next year.
Why are they changing it?
Yes.
I'll give you an example. I'll give you one quick example, okay? Penn State is scheduled, for example, to play Illinois in Beaver Stadium.
Right.
Because of the extra game in 2020, that means they have to go to Beaver Stadium three consecutive years. Well, that's not right. Right? That's not right.
Gotcha.
And remember that, I'm just using that as an example.
Yeah, probably, no, that makes sense.
It probably comes up in other areas as well, with other schools. But that extra game that was tagged on at the end, because it was only an 8-game schedule. The 9th game was a bonus game. Well, that bonus game at Penn State would be playing Illinois three times in a row here. That's not fair to Illinois.
All right. Well, that makes sense.
And I'm sure there's something in there that makes it better for Michigan. No.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
Hey, this doesn't look right for Michigan. We need to change the whole thing.
Probably for Ohio State, too.
I think Ohio State, tell you, it's more like, hey, Michigan's got a little problem here. All right. Let's talk about the Steelers. They've got the more competitive playoff game. Just kidding. I think you'll be very competitive on Sunday. I won't see the game, but, because I've got a game at noon on the road. So I will not see the Eagles game at all. But they've got the Chiefs. We bring in the great Neil Coolong, sir. Welcome.
It's great to be here as always. Thanks for having me. You just caught me in a sip of water, but we're good to go.
All right. And really great recovery on using the word water instead of the reality. No, I'm just kidding. What was Sunday night for you? What was that like watching that?
Honestly, here's what happened. I wrote off the idea that there was anything to even talk about as far as the Steelers not going to the playoffs. I tweeted that they qualified for the playoffs. I talked about who they were playing. It was a matter of when they'd play them. When it came out that it would be the Sunday night primetime game against the Chiefs, I said that I didn't acknowledge the idea that there was a tie. And I fell asleep. And I woke up, I'm not kidding you, 34 seconds on the clock in overtime with Vegas having the ball. And I shouted out a couple expletives and kind of woke myself up. I was like, there's no way this is happening. That's as close to a tie as you can possibly get. And that wasn't a chip shot field goal either.
No.
And it required a 10-yard run against a run defense with the game on the line. That had, I didn't see what the percentage, what the chances would have been of a tie versus a win versus a loss for Vegas in that situation. But I'll bet it was high 80s% that game was going to get tied. I mean, it should have happened. That's the weirdest thing about it, because I went to sleep thinking there was no way in the world. And I woke up with the idea in mind that now that I'm seeing this, there's no way they're not going to tie. So it's like I was wrong on both accounts, and what was once down is now up, and what was hot was cold. I don't know. I just know that the least likely Steelers team maybe that we've seen in the last 25 years it is in the playoffs, and I don't know whether they deserve to be or not.
Well, I'm sorry.
The whole season is just completely crazy.
I'm sorry you were asleep, because Staley put on a coaching show for the ages.
Yeah, we went back over that.
My goodness.
It's kind of like, don't poke the bear, It's I guess the thing, more than anything, is it's not as if he changed the personnel that he put on the field. I mean, what he said was, we wanted to get a more, you know, run defensive unit in there. Why weren't they in there before? You think they weren't going to run on first and second down? They were absolutely going to run. You knew that. So to take them off and then lose the play on top of it, you had stopped the clock. To some extent, I think Las Vegas can say they're, you know, we're going to posture now after the fact.
Sure.
I don't think anyone was planning on it. I think Vegas wanted to run the clock. I don't think there's much of a point in Staley either calling timeout or letting him
or going forward,
have a chance to win the game.
Or going,
that's coming down to a field goal.
Or going forward on fourth down at his own 18-yard line.
Yeah,
it's like, it's just sit there. Like, I want to ask you something, Neil. Think about the games that have been played this year. Which games have been won because the analytics were on their side?
Yeah, that's kind of the thing that we're getting to. It's cyclical.
Games happen, decisions have to be made. I want somebody who does this and wants to look into it should look into it and say which games were won because analytics swung it their way.
What I would say is this: why do you feel the 500 points they'll have at the end of the season, allegedly doing it your way, is better than the 497 points doing it the other way? Why is the aggregate, how does that matter so much in football? Baseball, I get it, because you score one run at a time.
Yep.
You play a lot more games.
Mm-hmm.
It's closer.
Yep.
Football, 36, the Chiefs beat the Steelers last time they played a couple weeks ago, 36-10. Whatever they did in that game, it added points. The decisions that they made that you can say this, you know, will add on 0.3 points over the course of the season, whatever that is. Why do those points matter? They only need 11 of them to win. You know, that's I don't understand how to reconcile the concepts that they come up with to say that this increases your win probability over time. If you do this consistently over time, these decisions, the results, the plays, though, are not, you know, heavily slanted your way. Basically, yes, if you convert every two-point conversion that you try, you're going to score more points than if you just kick it.
Honestly, I thought
the reality is, you're not going to.
I thought he was going to go for two in the last one. I thought, might as well go for it now.
Fair.
And I thought,
here's the thing.
And then he kicked. Like, really?
More than anything, the issue comes down to this. These plays are in a vacuum. They are not applied over the long haul. It doesn't work that way in football. Football is a play-to-play, fluid, dynamic machine, okay? I understand that you have a better chance to win the game if you convert the two-point conversion. But the two-point conversion, you have a 53% chance of making it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the numbers are doing. The numbers are not telling you to go for it. The numbers are telling you what the probability of you winning the game is based on the results. You still have to line up and play the game.
Yep.
So if you have, and I'll bring it back to this. I remember talking to you because my boss was in town and I was at his hotel when we did our spot back then in 2016 after the Steelers-Cowboys game when the Steelers went for it four or five times for a two-point conversion and they missed all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost the game by 3 points.
Yep.
That isn't to say all of those were bad decisions and that they were all linked, because they weren't. They're taken in the moment for what they're worth. But in the aggregate, they lost the game by never kicking an extra point and going for two mm-hmm. every time.
Right.
So if they got it the 10 times prior to that, you might have picked up another win because of that, but now you're 1-1 because of it. So that the situation is pretty much the same. Why don't you just kick it and you can put the pressure on the other team to have to do the mental gymnastics to figure all that out. That's just one perspective. I feel what it comes down to ultimately is matchups. Because for me,
every time.
I'm in 2016, I've got Ben Roethlisberger on the field, Antonio Brown, mm-hmm. Le'Veon Bell.
Yep.
I've got a great offensive line. I can come up with ways to get 2 yards, okay?
Yep.
I'm going to bet on that. I don't care. The analytics are going to say, you know, if you score more points, you should win the game. And obviously, I get that. I have a better-than-average chance of converting that consistently. that's why I'm going to do it. But that's because of my guys on the field. It has nothing to do with the numbers. Okay?
You'd be amazed what talent means.
Yeah, that's the part that gets lost in all this. We need to stop acting as if coaches are plugging controllers into a game console and moving everything around. Yeah. It's just not how it works, and I don't understand why people think that it is. You're not playing Madden, okay? The decisions that you're making are not based on whether you can do it or not. It's giving you information based on the results. So John Harbaugh, for example, that's another good one right now, and I've gotten into big arguments with coaches and data people on this. For me, I can understand why he would do that, because
I
the
do
rubber
too.
Meets the road. Yep. Tyler Huntley is your quarterback.
Yep.
Do you want to go into overtime in Lambeau against Aaron Rodgers?
I agree.
Or do you want to end the game right now with Aaron Rodgers not on the field?
That's right.
I'm probably taking that chance.
Right. I agree with you.
Against the Steelers, that defense, goal line, red zone, maybe, maybe not. I might question that one a little bit more, but the concept is still the same thing. Mm-hmm. Tyler Huntley is your quarterback. Okay. I know that seems wrong considering he's the one that has to make that play, but I'll take Tyler Huntley in 2 yards versus Tyler Huntley needing 80 yards in overtime.
That's right.
And you don't know why I think that? Because we just saw it in the second game. That's exactly why he went for it.
Right.
They didn't do anything. Pittsburgh didn't do much. Baltimore didn't do anything.
Right.
And it's not like that's an accident. I don't care what the numbers say. You know what you have on the field. Baltimore was inexplicably afraid to run the ball after dominating the Steelers in the third quarter of that game. Inexplicably stopped running the ball, and they put a lot of it into their pass game. They have one receiver who I would even want on my team, with the exception of Rashad Bateman. They have one receiver on that team that I would ever throw the ball to, Mark Andrews.
Yep.
Hollywood Brown had an opportunity to probably seal the game for the Ravens.
Didn't.
What does he do? He catches it like he's 5'9", 180 pounds. He doesn't shield the roving free safety who's coming at him with a full head of steam. Mm-hmm. He doesn't protect the ball.
Nope.
He's a bum. You don't win with guys like that, and that's exactly why.
Yeah.
Plays like that have to be made. The Ravens don't have any of them. But you do have the ability in 2 yards to come up with something fancy that can misdirect the team for just enough time to be able to get the job done. And they had it, except for Lamar missed the throw. I said Huntley earlier, and I apologize.
Right.
Lamar missed the throw. And I could see why they did it. I also understand why, in retrospect, it doesn't look like it's a very smart idea. But that, to me, both of those decisions were personnel-based decisions and not analytical ones. So I think there's a difference. With Staley, who's made no bones of the fact that he's going to go for it more often than not, I could understand why you would do that as well. You've got one of the best quarterbacks in the game. You've got a great inside receiver with great feet and great hands. You have a dynamic running back. There are reasons you should feel confident in getting 2 yards.
Yep.
Okay? I get that.
Not if you're on 18. But for two points,
yes. Sometimes you kind of have to play the game that's in front of you and not the game that's back on the Excel spreadsheet. And maybe that cost them. I don't know. To be honest with you, they shouldn't have been in that position. The Chargers are better than the Raiders and the Steelers. They really shouldn't be in the position where they had to win or tie to advance the playoffs. They should have been able to do that on their own. Staley's a young coach. I think it's a young team that they're going to get better. I think the Raiders and the Steelers both get bounced in epic fashion this weekend.
Right.
So it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme. But it's fun now.
But the huge problem they have is they lost to Houston. I mean, that's why they were in the position they were in.
Yeah.
All right, so the matchup with Kansas City. Engram, of course, goes over to Kansas City. That allowed Chris Jones to play more inside where he is a force. It seems to have changed the Kansas City defense. Now, what problem does that cause for the Steelers' offense?
What I get in watching Mel Engram play with the Chiefs is he's doing exactly what he was doing in Pittsburgh. Same argument I'd make. It allows Cam Hayward to kind of stay on one side. It allows a breath for T.J. Watt and or Alex Highsmith, and they had a rotation of three of them, including the Defensive Player of the Year. Engram would have done more in Pittsburgh, in my opinion, than he's doing in Kansas City. But to your point, you're exactly right. Chris Jones is more of the setup for them. Chris Jones is one of the probably 10 best defensive players in the game, maybe five. Getting him comfortable
where he can wreak havoc, and having another guy outside of him that can make plays like he did against Denver. I don't know if you saw that or not, but that was insane.
Yes.
My God, you don't see many games flip the way that did. All of a sudden, Ingram is on top of Locke in the backfield. Ball pops out after he hits Gordon. Gone. It's like, oh, man, Denver won this game. It's over now, though. All of that said, Ingram is he's a playmaker. He's not an aggregate stat guy. He's somebody that can make one, two, maybe even three highlight plays a game, and even if he doesn't make everything else, it seems to me that the Chiefs, Spagnuolo, has done enough to set him up where they can use him. That if you pay too much attention to Jones, you got one guy coming, and he's coming off the edge. He's big and fast. We've talked about this all year. He's a guy that can play inside and out and do it from the stand-up position. So in a lot of ways, I think he is very much like Cam Hayward, very much like Chris Jones, but smaller. You know, he's got 30 less pounds than those guys do, 40 probably. He's got quickness, though, that allows him to be able to maneuver outside. So you can use him in the A-gap. You can put him outside of the edge as well, depending on what you want to do defensively. That allows your stalwart players to be in position to do what they do. And if that's something the defense is focusing on for obvious reasons, you're going to get a good mismatch. And that's what Ingram now brings to them. And the Chiefs, more than anything, weren't getting those plays out of their front seven, and now they are. So for me, more than anything, I just think about what could have been if that situation, you know, kind of worked itself out the way that it really should have, because I'm not sure what Melvin Ingram signed on thinking. They gave you $4 million on a one-year deal. There's a second-year player that they obviously want to play. They want to get these guys rest, though, and considering the amount of times that Watt was injured and considering the amount of snaps, the Steelers gave something called Taco Charlton, something called Derek Tuska, something called, I don't even remember the other guy's name, Ingram would have played plenty. So I don't want to hear I wasn't playing for him. That's garbage. That's a complete lie. He wanted to get with a winning team that was probably in a better position than Pittsburgh was, or he wanted to set himself up for an extension after the season, because he only signed a one-year deal. He had planned from the beginning to try to get traded if he was not starting, and that's exactly how it ended up working out.
Well, we're about to find out whether he's right. All right. We're about to find out on Sunday night whether he's right. Neil, always a pleasure. That was fascinating conversation, but I'm not surprised. Thanks.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coolonger, News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.